What is good, Black Baseball Mixtape family? It's your boy Cheats here. It is Friday, April 5th. I am in the lab, BBM HQ. It has been an exciting week, man, for baseball all across every level of the game. I wanted to take a moment to share with you some of the things that I've been observing from the first week and a half, 2 weeks of the Major League Baseball season and kind of what's going on. So I broke it down into my top five things I watched this week, and I want to share them with you, get your feedback on them. I'm excited. Let's go right into it. Number one, I think, is the big one, a big upset in college baseball. That's right. If you haven't been following, Southern University is an HBCU. I covered Southern out of the Cactus Jack HBCU Classic out in Houston. They followed that trip and went down to the Andre Dawson Classic in Vero Beach. Southern is probably the most iconic HBCU baseball program ever. They've got alumni like Ricky Weeks. They've got alumni like Lou Brock. They've had powerhouse programs historically. Obviously, over the last decade or so, HBCU baseball has been drained. It's not the same. However, they're about 20 miles away from LSU. Everyone knows LSU is the defending national champions. Southern went to LSU this past Monday, and actually picked up a victory 12-7. It was a one-off game. It was not a series. You know, in college baseball, they usually play 3 or 4 game series. This was not that. This was a, hey, Southern, you're right here in our backyard. LSU, let's make this thing special like we've done in the past. And it was a big, big shock, even though there's a couple things I wanted to point out. One, Southern, even though overall their record is one game below 500, I believe. Yeah, they are just 12-13. They have been winning quite a bit recently. In their last 9 games, they've won 8 of them. Now, granted, that's not against the LSU-level competition, but they've been putting some things together, getting some wins, none bigger than this one. This is going to be a really historic win for this team for this season. But they go into Alex Box Stadium in LSU. The other thing I want to do say is LSU is the defending national champions. They are 20-10 on the season, but they're also not the same national champion. If you lose Paul Skeens, you lose Dylan Cruz, you lose Trey Morgan, they're not exactly the same team. They have Tommy Tanks. They have Braswell, who plays shortstop on that team. They've got some pitching, definitely, but it's not the exact same team, obviously, that won the national championship. As in college baseball, everything changes over. They have also, while they're 20-10, I believe they're now 18th ranked in the country. They are 3-7 in the SEC. Say all of this not to take away from what I think is a season-defining kind of victory for HBCUs. This is only the 6th time since 2020 that an HBCU team has beaten any Power 5 team, let alone the defending national champions. His name is Tyler Hawkins. He is a graduate student transfer from Louisville. He had a day, 3-for-6, a home run, I believe 3 RBIs, to help kind of fuel this victory for Southern over LSU. Coach Crenshaw recently took over the Southern program not too long ago. I was able to speak to him and all of the HBCU coaches at the Cactus Jack about the effects of the transfer portal, and I was actually pretty surprised. And what I mean by that was their response to the transfer portal is basically similar but almost even more challenging than Power 5 teams. And what I mean by that is if they've got a young player that they've recruited, taken their time to put in their program, and they have a really good season early on at their HBCU, there's a very good chance that that player leaves their program. And they go to a Power 5 because now they're getting that Power 5 look. They're young. They've got years of eligibility left. And that's a difficult situation. Could you imagine spending your time recruiting a kid, grooming a kid, getting him in your program? He does what he's supposed to do, and now you can't keep him because he's actually bowled out of HBCU. That's what a lot of HBCU coaches are facing. However, there's situations like Mr. Hawkins, who 4 years at Louisville never really got on the field like he was supposed to. He was a highly rated player, I think the number two player in the state of Kentucky coming out of high school, and never got the opportunity. He finishes up his 4 years. He has an extra graduate year of eligibility. So he comes to Southern and balls out, and this is by far the defining moment of his college career, being able to show off at LSU. Again, this game was played at LSU, Southern University, 12-7, a season-defining win, not just for the Southern program, but for HBCUs as well. Now, I think there's going to be a lot of people that read into this and say, you know, this is a victory that goes beyond something that it goes beyond, right? It's in many ways, it's a serve you right victory, and in the way that a lot of our community feels like our kids are overlooked by Power Fives and programs like LSU and don't get the opportunity to play there. I could say all of that is true and all of that is a little bit exaggerated all at the same time. I think it is true that a lot of Black kids get overlooked by Power Fives. I think that's a fact. Does this particular victory prove to everyone that's ever been slighted by a Power Five that HBCU programs are equally as good? I think that's a challenge, and I say that because I think if LSU played Southern 10 times in a row, LSU is going to win probably 9 of those times. I just think that's probably what's going to happen. I think it's awesome that Southern got the win. I think that it's awesome Coach Crenshaw got the win. I think it's awesome that there's a week of interest in HBCU baseball more than the normal, because HBCU baseball is special. I'm telling you, from somebody that saw it live and up close in Houston, it's got a spirit. It is amazing. I think big props to Southern University on their win. And let's enjoy it for what it is. Look, baseball is that type of game. You line up on the field, you play. If you underestimate your opponent, especially, not saying that LSU did, but clearly LSU's got some things to work out as well, you're going to get beat. You're going to get beat. You run into a hot pitcher, you're probably going to get beat. So, hey, congrats, kudos to Southern University. That's number one on the list of what we were watching this week. Number two, let's just call it what it is. The Oakland Athletics are a mess. They're an absolute mess. They're a mess on the field. They're a mess off the field. More importantly, they're a mess off the field. It was announced this week that Oakland, for whatever reason, the owner is doing what the owner does, and he wants out of Oakland. He wants out of Oakland. He wants in Vegas. The owner wants absolutely nothing to do with Oakland. The mayor of Oakland is actually facing a recall situation now in her municipality because of all the things that's going wrong in Oakland. And hey, look, I don't know anything about Oakland local politics. I just know that the mayor has said publicly that they're doing all they can. They've offered all they can to keep the Athletics in Oakland. Everybody in the world knows that the Athletics belong in Oakland. They've been Oakland's team forever. They should continue to be Oakland's team. It seems like this particular owner, they want the Athletics out of Oakland, and they're willing to play their interim games in Sacramento for the next 3 years until the stadium is built in Vegas. So it is what it is. It is highly, highly upsetting, highly disappointing. On the field is really bad. The Athletics are 1-6. At the time of this recording, their run differential is negative 29. One of their, obviously, AL stolen base leader rookies last year, they just sent down a AAA. I have no idea what Mark Kotze is doing. I have no idea what the organization is doing. And it bears out. They also had like 6,000 fans in the stands the other day. So it's all bad in Oakland. And I don't know what you can do at this point to put them back on track. I don't know what you can do to have a solid, you know, structure of support for this particular team this season. It's going to be bad. It's going to be bad in Oakland, I think, all year round. And it's unfair to young players like Lawrence Butler and these guys that really are trying to put their best foot forward and play their hearts out just to play baseball. And they've got to deal with all of this other stuff. So I actually am very sympathetic to the players of the Athletics. I am least sympathetic to the owner of the Athletics. Very sympathetic to the community of Oakland who's having their team ripped away from them. And I just, you know, I don't know enough about, like I said, the mayor and that part of it to see if they've done all they can do. But it's all bad all the way around. And there is no end in sight. This Oakland situation is going to be a mess. I hope they're able to win some games for the sake of the players, but I don't think it's going to make a difference. Number three and number four on the list of things that I'm watching this week in baseball. Let's start with the positive, which is must-watch baseball teams. And actually, there's only one that I'm putting on this list right now that's just must-watch. We call it League Pass in the NBA. If it's not your favorite team, what team are you watching? MLB.com had a great article about watchable teams. You know, I think there's a couple teams in there that's in the top five, but there's a clear number one. And the number one team to watch in baseball is the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm not a Dodger fan. I'm an Oriole fan. Orioles were number two, by the way, on the MLB.com most watchable list. But I watched every Orioles game this season so far. It hails in comparison to what's happening at Chavez Ravine right now. It hails in comparison to leading off Mookie Betts, batting Shohei Ohtani second, batting Freddie Freeman third. It hails in comparison to having Tyler Glasnow out there, Yamamoto out there, Bobby Miller out there. It hails in comparison to seeing Mookie Betts play shortstop one night, second base the next night, and killing the ball. You can say what you want about all that's going on in LA, but you stop the scroll. LA Dodgers are stop the scroll right now. And if you are following, then you know the number one reason that you stop the scroll in LA right now is Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is absolutely phenomenal right now. He is on a tear of all tears. Mookie Betts is hitting 485 at the time of this recording with five home runs. He has scored 14 runs. He's got 16 hits. He just went over 1,500 hits. Anything that Mookie does is much must-watch TV. And I'm excited, man. I'm excited about what Freddie's doing. I'm excited about what Hernandez is doing. I'm excited of watching Glasnow and Yamamoto. But all of it, I've just got to be very clear, all of it hails into comparison to what Mookie's doing right now. He is just so on fire. You have to watch. If you haven't been watching Mookie Betts, you have to watch. If you haven't watched the Dodgers this season, find some time. Watch the Dodgers. It is a fun watch. All right. So let's flip the script to the other side. Who is the least watchable team right now in MLB? And here's the thing. I don't think they're the least watchable team in my mind. I actually want to see them play. I circled them on the calendar before the season started and said, this is probably going to be my MLB extra innings team. They are the Miami Marlins. Let me tell you, whether it's must-watch or not, they're not very good right now. The Marlins are 0-8 at the time of this recording. They have not won a game. Their run differential is negative 30. One of the things that obviously gets us excited at the Black Baseball Mixtape about this particular team is Jazz Chisholm, Tim Anderson, Josh Bell, Nick Gordon. They've all been in the lineup. And we're all thinking Jazz, huge year. TA, bounce back year. Bell, slugging. And to date, let's just call it what it is. Clearly at 0-8, they've completely underperformed. But They just haven't hit the way that they need to hit. They haven't defended the way they need to defend. And this is the biggest problem. They can't pitch. They can't pitch, and they're getting worse and worse news every day about their pitching rotation. As you know, it was just announced that Eury Pérez is having season-ending Tommy John surgery. Like, I have no idea who makes up this rotation and how they're going to find the arms. They're not a competitive team right now, and they are tough to watch. Now, does that mean that the Marlins can't turn it around? Does that mean that, you know, Jazz isn't going to have an all-star year and TA is not going to have a bounce-back year? They may, but the biggest problem is, I think, with the lack of arms that they have, they're going to struggle to win games. And it's just going to put such a burden on this Marlins team that I thought going into the season they had made some good moves. Obviously, everybody knows that the departing Kim Yang, GM, took the team to the playoffs last year. Obviously, left the team this year in really controversial, I think, really difficult circumstances. We at the Black Baseball Mixtape are a big fan of Kim Yang. We want her to be very successful in whatever she does left. Next, based off of the reports, very sympathetic to Kim Yang. I leave the team to the playoffs and you want to hire someone to run baseball operations on top of me? That's not going to fly. That's just what's publicly reported. This particular team had a lot of high hopes for. Hope they can turn it around. They are a difficult, difficult watch at 0-8. So the Marlins are tough. Number five, the final thing I want to highlight. I had the opportunity on opening day to travel down to Norfolk, Virginia to watch the best AAA baseball team I have ever seen. I just got to call a spade a spade. The best AAA baseball team I have ever seen from top to bottom is the Norfolk Tides. They're the AAA team of the Baltimore Orioles. Jackson Holliday is the number one prospect in the MLB pipeline. He led off that opening day with a home run. Bottom of the first at bat, home run. That lineup is completely stacked when you talk about Holliday, Heston Jerkstad, Kobe Mayo, Connor Norby, Cal Stowers. All of those guys are major league players. Earl Robinson, Daniel Johnson's on this team. Like, they've got it all in their lineup, top to bottom. The Tide are 6-1 at the time of this recording, but more importantly than the 6-1, they're putting up Herculean type numbers. I'm talking about numbers we haven't seen in a very long time. They put up 26 runs this week against the Charlotte Knights. They won the game 26-11. Before that, they put up double digits. They played, I think they're 6-1. In their six wins, they put up double-digit runs. 1, 2, 3, 4. Four times they put up double-digit runs. And then last night, they put up 9 runs. They are just a murderer's row of baseball talent, young baseball talent. The interesting thing is the Orioles are young. The Orioles are very good. The Orioles won over 100 games last year and made the playoffs. They've got all of these guys stashed in AAA. They've got more guys stashed in AA. But I can tell you now, the Norfolk Tide might be able to beat the Marlins. You put them in a series. I'm not talking about a one-off game. I'm not talking about LSU versus Southern in a one-game, winner-takes-all type scenario. Put the Norfolk Tide in a series against the Marlins, the Athletics, and the Nationals. It might be a competitive situation. That's all I'm going to say there. It has been an amazing, amazing week in baseball. I hope you're following. I hope you're telling a friend to follow. I hope you're checking out not just what's happening, obviously, on the field, all the interesting things that we're talking about, too, that's happening off the field. I want to highlight Black players in the game at every level as much as possible. I want to highlight Black coaches. I want to highlight front office folks at every level. We're talking about every level. So I'm going to leave you on this podcast with a preview of my next podcast drop that's coming on Monday. And it is the upper-level hitting coordinator for the Baltimore Orioles, Sherman Johnson. You don't want to miss this interview. Coach Johnson is fairly new into coaching. His playing days just ended not too long ago. I believe he's 33 years old. And he's just got an amazing approach to just working with young players, working with veterans, being one of the guys, but also being an authority figure. You don't want to miss it. It's a really interesting podcast. Coach Sherman Johnson's coming up on Monday, followed by a bunch of other stuff. We do have a giveaway. Our giveaway ends on Sunday night, so make sure you go to Instagram. It's an Instagram giveaway. Make sure you go to Instagram and follow that as well. We want to thank all of our partners, the Players Alliance, Steelers Sports, Orencia 21. Ladies and gentlemen, until next time.